Hello, I'm Fei Kwan and you're watching It's About Youth. Now the campaigning period for the six state elections has officially kicked off after nomination day last Saturday. Yet of the 570 candidates that will be contesting in the 245 state seats, only 71 are women. That accounts for 12.5% of all the candidates this round. To discuss this further with me on the show is Sasha Lina Abdul Latif, the PN candidate for Bukit Antara Bangsa, as well as the Bersatu Legal and Constitution Bureau Deputy Chief. Yeah. And my other guest is Jamalia Jamaluddin, the incumbent Bandar Utama Assembly person, also you're coming to defend the Bandar Utama seat. Yeah. She's also the Vice Chief of the DAP Socialist Youth. Thank you for joining me on the show. Welcome. Yeah,
thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Now, the figure that I just mentioned, 71 women candidates this round, two of which are the both of you. Firstly, what are your thoughts on this? Saudari Jamalia, I should start with you.
Well, definitely when you look at the percentages, it's around 12%. Mm. Of course, for PH, we've got almost around 19% out of the candidates. And within DAP Selangor itself, we've already achieved 30%.
Right.
Because we've got five candidates out of 15 candidates, that's women. But to be honest, when you look at, you know, global gender index gap, then you will realize that actually in Malaysia, we are far away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are looking at the gap, so how you look at the gap is like, if zero is totally inequality and if it's one is complete equality. So Malaysia is at 0.6.
Right.
And when you look at the sub-index, then you will realize that we're doing okay in education, we're doing okay in health sub-index, a little bit low, actually quite low in economy, where it's just 0.7. But can you imagine that it's only 0.1 when it comes to politic empowerment? So definitely we need to do more. So I do believe, although, you know, we are from different party, from Pakatan Harapan, I believe Sasha is from Perikatan Nasional. But I do believe that when you talk about women empowerment, then we need to both
work together
to do certain things to voice out for women, to find opportunities. So for example, like, especially when we have male leaders, they're attacking us.
Yeah.
I remember certain politicians when they say that, you know, women are not meant to be leader.
Emotionally.
And then they, so it's not only women that's emotional, right? Guys tend to be emotional at times. Then they say that, you know, susah lah nak suruh mereka kerja, nanti turun banjir kena make up dulu, all that. So when we, when certain politicians, they say things like that, I do believe that we should actually voice out about it, regardless of political party.
Okay, I'd like to, I'll go on to that cooperation in a little bit more. But Sasha, what do you have to say about this?
I totally agree. I think although we're from different parties, different coalition, but when it comes to women in political, and when you, like Jamalia said, you attack us, I think in that sense we go beyond party, political party or, you know, any coalition. I think in that sense we will work together. I think we need more women representation. And just to go back on the percentages, I think it's not a correct figure, because the 12%, the 71 women in power, because there are seats where we are going against each other. So we once we go against each other, we'll cancel each other out. So I feel that we need a mechanism where if there's already a women representation there, maybe we can have another representation. You know, in that sense, because we want to have to have more women in state legislative assembly, in parliament. So when we cancel each other because we're from different parties, then it means fewer women will be, you know, in power. So I think, like I echo what Jamaya said, when it comes to that, we're definitely hand in hand.
As you mentioned, the standard is 30%, but to even reach 30% of women, that means you need to field even more women out, because they will be contesting against each other, right? So both as female representatives, what would you say are some of the barriers that are hindering women from being actively engaged in politics? Sarah Isasha, maybe we start with you first.
For me, I think we're living in 2023. There shouldn't be any hindrance, because when you want to talk about, you know, women earning, now women are it's already a common thing that women are also the breadwinner of the family. Mm-hmm. That you requested us to do. But when it comes to politics, suddenly you wanna use gender against us. So I don't think that's fair. So when it comes to global benchmark, it's 30%. But for me, in Malaysia, we have 50% voters or population are women.
Yep.
So we need more than that, actually. What we need to fight for is to have more than 30%. Which if we can get 50%, I think that's when we feel that we've reached. I mean, someone would say it'd be utopian. But mm-hmm. I think now as we grow and in terms of whether we have representation, I don't think for any party that's a barrier. We don't have any lack of women leaders, especially for Sri Kandi. And now in Bersatu, we have Sri Kandi Muda. And even our head of Sri Kandi Muda, she was one of the candidates in the last PRU election. So there's no lack in women being leaders, but we just need to make sure and voice out more that every time there's elections, we need to voice out that we need more women in power.
Mm-hmm. And there's no lack of capable women in politics. It's rather a matter of the opportunities, right?
Yeah.
So Dari Jamala, you talked a bit about a bit of that discrimination and gender stereotypes just now.
Yeah, I think that if we have to come up to one point, I think the major barriers will be glass ceiling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do believe that actually in our society, we still got issue with how we stigmatize or how women are seen to work on more conventional roles or responsibilities.
True.
Probably I can give a very simple example. So throughout my journey, not only in politics, but in many other sectors as well, you will see that when women get married or they are pregnant, sometimes they have to give up their studies. Mm. I've encountered friends or colleagues who've done that. And when I was a counselor before, so I remember my colleague who is also a counselor, she proudly told me that, she can be counselor because she also take care of all of the house chores perfectly.
Mm.
She cook, she prepare for the husband, and she make sure that she handle everything perfectly fine. Then she go out and do her responsibilities as a counselor. I'm very proud of her because I realized that we can really multitask.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but at the same time, I do realize that it's because how society put us conveniently as someone who's supposed to provide in terms of family responsibility mm-hmm. or who always support as a second role,
mm-hmm.
assistant and whatnot. So I think that deter us from moving forward. So I do agree that we need to voice out. We need to ensure that our party have full commitment.
Mm.
Because I do realize sometimes that when a couple decide, who should be working at home, who should be working outside, then usually women will always naturally have to be the housewife.
Mm.
I'm not saying that women shouldn't be.
But
I do believe that we should be allowed to discuss and look at who's more suitable to take at which role or which task based on capability, based on convenience and so on. So I do hope that because political party at the end, we are the one who send out our policy makers to be at parliament or to be at state assembly.
Mm-hmm.
I do hope that each of our political party will be committed towards women empowerment and creating more women's leaders.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I think what you said strikes a chord with a lot of women, not just in politics, but in careers in general, the double burden that they face.
We should change that perception.
Yeah.
We should make it fair because being fair to women, the equality for women, at the end, it helps with men's equality as well.
Definitely.
Because probably some men likes to be house husband, I don't know. Probably they enjoy taking care of kids at home, but then they also face society pressure that, that's not something that men should do.
Mm-hmm.
So, vice versa. I do believe we're strong enough to be, in leadership roles. We've seen many capable leaders who've become ministers, who have served the nation, so why not?
Mm-hmm.
We just have to change our perception a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, coming on to that point actually, how, it's important to have many diverse perspectives, right? How important is it then for women to actively participate in decision-making roles at the state level. Sadari Sasha?
Okay. So just, I think I have a bit of a different view from mm-hmm. what Zamana has said. Again, like I mentioned just now, when it comes to, you know, asking women now, because now I think if you look into the gender roles now, it kind of have a shift already, that if you, as a woman, if you are more educated, then you get more pay, you know, because you get better job mm-hmm. applications, but then you are required to work together. As when it comes to making money for the family, it's not an issue. Okay, you have to work too to help me.
I have to correct it a little bit before okay. people misunderstood. I do think we are as capable as men. Mm. I do think sometimes I feel we are more capable than
yes,
men.
Definitely.
But that's why I say that it's glass ceiling. Glass yeah. ceiling means that it's something that is there, but we are not aware of it, yeah. or we are not
because the
attention.
Perception is still there.
Yeah,
yeah, that women yeah. have to stay at home and things yeah, like that. But I think yeah. there is a bit of a shift there that now men feels like, okay, since you're going to earn more, then maybe I can take back, sit back and have a better role. But that doesn't happen when the women say, I want to be involved in politics. Mm-hmm. When I'm supposed to make money, okay, you can go and make money, I'll take up the children. But once a woman say that, okay, now I want to be involved in politics because I have issues that I want to voice out. Yeah. But then it becomes, because they feel that when a woman want to take a position in politics, oh, that's their social thing. It's not a responsibility. Like if men, if they want to be involved in politics, straight away as women will say, okay, we'll support you. Mm. But women don't get that kind of support. But of course for me, alhamdulillah, mm. my husband is very supportive. Yeah. I do have a very strong, you know, family and extended family support for my campaign and also my involvement in politics. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case for a lot of women out yeah. there. And I think even the perception needs to be changed. That now it's 2023, we've moved forward so much. Mm-hmm. And in terms of politics, it has to go hand in hand with that movement as well. That's what I think. And mm-hmm. Coming back to your question, in holding in decision making, I mean, when it comes to men, they're not required to give their credentials. I mean, we've had situations where even our Minister of Defence, he was a chef. He was a chef and he was the Minister of Defence. But when a woman wants to hold a position of power in that sort, they're asked, what are your credentials? Do you have any background mm. in security, in defence? Or women, they're only supposed to, you know, go into the, you know, women's and housing and things like that. So that needs to be changed as well. So why is it when a man, you want to give them power, you don't check into their credentials? But when it comes to women, what are your skills? What are your credentials? How can you manage that? I think, okay, like for defence, as I mentioned, is if anything happens, the victims are mostly women and children. So we need a woman's perspective mm-hmm. when we make a decision. And we are known that as women, we can be more empathetic. We are more sympathetic in making decision because men, they want to have stern decision. Yeah. So mm-hmm. women's perspective in making that decision is very, very important, I feel. Mm-hmm. So that's why, and that's one of the reasons why I want to get involved, you know, in politics and now state level and inshallah even in parliament level.
Mm-hmm. Different standards for different genders yes. over there. And actually, I like to come to that because when you talk about politics, of course, leaders in your parties do play a role. Have either of you observed perhaps more of a political will for your parties to advocate for more women leadership? Sadari Jamana?
I much believe my party does. Mm-hmm. I'm from Democratic Action Party. So, firstly, me personally, I can be an example because I was trained by BEIN.
Yeah.
Previously, before I became the candidate in 2018, I was the councillor mm-hmm. for Petaling Jaya City Council. So I have been given an opportunity to actually serve before they evaluate whether I'm the suitable candidate for Dun Bandar Utama or not. Within my party, actually, we've got this commitment that our CEC, which is the highest level of leadership, you at least have to have 30% mm. of women leadership within the CEC. Same with DEPSI. I'm from DEPSI as well. DEPSI yeah. National, we also have got that kind of standard to mm-hmm. ensure that there's women's participation. I believe that you can see whether a political party, are they really or truly committed? I feel mine is because mm-hmm. When I was contesting in 2018, they put me in a winnable seat because they want us to serve as a women and youth. Mm-hmm. And I hope that, you know, there will be more political party to lead us to that direction. Yeah. Just as I mentioned before, like in the Peace Langor, mm-hmm. we've got actually more than 30%, we've got 33% of women mm-hmm. That have been nominated as candidate. And most of us are in renewable seats to ensure that we can represent our people voices in the state assembly seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And Saudari Sasha, about your party in terms of female participation?
Yeah, so we need to be aware that Bersatu is a relatively young political party. Yeah. We only set up in 2016, 2017. And I think there is very much political will in focusing in having more women as candidates. And the fact that we already have our Sri Kandi Muda, they just set up our Sri Kandi Muda, and the head of Sri Kandi Muda, as I mentioned, was also a candidate there. So there are moves, especially from Sri Kandi, our Sri Kandi wing, to have more women participation in the in our party. Mm-hmm. So as for the AP, because they have fewer candidates, of course they can match 30%. Mm-hmm. And in Bersatu, you know,
we've got a lot of candidates.
And with PAS and all, and I can safely say even for Ampang, we have two Dewan Undangan Negeri for Perikatan Bersatu and PAS, both are we have women candidates there. Dr. Mm-hmm. Cikgu Sharifah is for Dun Lembah Jaya, mm-hmm. and myself in Bukit Antarabangsa. So I believe even PAS also, will meet that they have no issues of of putting out capable mm-hmm. and very committed women leaders as candidates for this election.
But it was mentioned earlier, you know, how there's no problem on putting out women candidates, but sometimes they tend to go head to head or they were put in winnable seats. Both of you, do you think there are any approaches that parties can adopt to ensure that women are have a fair chance at contesting their representative seats?
First of all, I do believe that you'll need to have full commitment from the party. Mm. I mean, idealistically, we really don't want women to go against women.
Yeah.
But sometimes, who should decide which party to take on which seat to decide who should put female there? Mm. For example, I am already the existing one that served, but I cannot stop others party who wants to put a woman there because that is their party consideration and decision. Therefore, I think at the end of the day, it will come down to what commitment the party have. Prove it with percentages, like how many percentage of women that fill up in the candidacy or at least in the higher up level that they can actually really make decision. I do believe that that's why it's very important for us as not only candidate but women leaders in politics to actually voice out our opinion to ensure that we actually check what our party is doing, whether they are really providing enough training ground so they just don't put women, you know, as a candidate to make it a sexy topic. Oh, how many percentages of women that we have put, but in the end of the day, you put them at very marginal seat. Mm. So it means nothing. You really have to empower women.
And so there is Sasha, anything to add on when it comes to women empowerment in politics? Any support structures or anything that you'd like to see?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it comes back to trainings. I mean, like, but definitely what Jamal has said, that you can't just put a person or a woman, you know, as a candidate and not give her any training and expect her, and if she wins and he becomes an adun or a parliamentarian, and then she doesn't know what to do. So it comes back to basic. And I think we have now our Sri Kandi Muda and also with Sri Kandi, those are the things that we really take really important into account, that you need to have basic training. What are your drive when you want to be a leader or you want to take over a kawasan? Because we do have Ketua Bahagian in Bersatu who are women, and that's one thing that I'm very proud of, because you know, women being a Ketua Bahagian states a huge statement that we do believe in women empowerment. And I think those are the things that we will definitely ask our party to do more of. You know, you don't just stop at party level. We also need to empower, you know, our community, our voters.
State position as well, candidate's position, because that is the place that you really engage with the people, and then you really get to serve the people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's
so
very
even
important.
As for our voters, for our, not across the board, for the rakyat, for women, that's something that I would want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, provide training for them. Maybe it's not just about how to be a leader. They need other trainings as well. Because I believe that now that I've you know, started in Ampang. And I've met more people now because as a lawyer, you know, you just meet your clients. You mm-hmm. don't. That's just your client base. But now, when you come as a candidate and you've met more people, there are other things that more things that you can do. People need trainings about how to, you know, apply for jobs. People need training about how to be more confident. And now, you know, with social media, that's where everything starts. So they need trainings on that. So don't just stop at party level. Do other things as well. And definitely that's something I'm going to look into.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very inspiring. As we're talking about that, something you're going to look into, as both of you now prepare to contest in your respective seats, Saudari Sasha in Bukit Antara Bangsa and Saudari Jamalia in Bandar Utama, I'd like to ask, what sort of key issues then would be your primary focus in your campaigns, Saudari Sasha?
Okay. I'd also like to take this opportunity as well, because a lot of people, when you say Bukit Antara Bangsa, they only think about UK Perdana and Bukit Antara Bangsa itself, where actually my area, it stems down from Bandar Baru Ampang, we have Kampung Melayu Ampang, Pekan Ampang, you know, Ampang Point, and then it goes up, Kuala Ampang, and goes up to UK Perdana. So my constituent or my DUN is very diverse. We have the B40, M40, and also the T20s up there in Bukit Antara Bangsa. So for on the hilly side, the issues has always been hill slopes. They have issues about Cerun. They're still worried about new developments coming in because, as we know, historically, there have been massive landslides there. And whether they need, of course, most of the people there say they don't want any new developments because they're worried about, you know, land movements and everything. So that's one of the issues I've already informed most of the people I've gone there, that will be one of my focus. Any new developments that's being approved, whether it was done properly, that's something that I believe that once I become adun, I can look into whether, you know, how it was approved, whether it was done properly and things like that. And when you come a bit, you know, on the downside, you still have issues about urban poor. Ampang, being DUN Bukit Antara Bangsa, being very near the city, we have massive urban poor still there. Mm. So Tan Sri Muhyiddin also has voiced out that one of the things that he instructed the new MB to do is to have a task force in economy. So we're going to focus on kos hari hidup, we're going to focus on urban poor, and definitely we're going to make more job opportunities in Selangor and in Bukit Antara Bangsa as well.
Mm-hmm. Those are critical issues for such an urban area. How about you, Saudari Jamalia?
Mm-hmm. So starting from constituency, I feel that because I have already served one term, I sort of understand the, you know, demographics of my area. Previously, even before 2018, we have done a survey what's needed the most by residents under Bandar Utama, and definitely is more relates to safety and security issues, better quality of life, traffic issues, etc. So throughout my journey, actually our team have done a lot to actually engage with our neighborhoods, so that we actually understand, because although Bandar Utama is, you know, is like, you know, a huge area, but sometimes you realize that different areas, they've got different needs, different things that they want, and different things that makes them happy.
Mm.
Yeah. So we have already know most of our areas, what they need, what they want. We have close relationship with our resident associations. So we have solved most of the lower hanging fruits issue, and then we are aiming to continue to solve certain other issues. Currently, we've got a retention pond projects going on to solve the flood issues that have been happening for more than 10 years.
Yep.
We are solving piping issues that existing, rubbish issues, which I do wish that I have a second term to continue to make sure that, because actually one term is a little bit short for us to set long-term goals.
Yep.
Yeah, but also definitely, what I think as policymaker, what we do is that we actually connect with the ground, and then we bring certain information, certain things we know based on our experience and engagement with our people at the ground, and then we bring it to state level so that they actually know what's happening and they can improve their policy, or they can create new policy that's beneficial for Mandat Utama residents. So that we are going to look into senior citizen care, how we actually can institutionalize aged care. Because we've got a lot of active senior citizens at Mandat Utama. If you are talking about senior citizens, we got around probably 15%. Okay. If you're talking about retirees that's going to becoming senior citizen, that's around 25%. You add it together, is around 40%. That's age 50 and above. And then if you're talking about those who are preparing to retire, then you've got another percentage that is 18%, then all adds up together is amount to more than 50%. So we do find that senior citizen healthcare activities are very important, because we have that kind of attitude that when we talk about retiree, most of Asian people sometimes they think that is the end of it, but actually we can enjoy a lot of activities, which is something that I hope in State Assembly I can help to improve for.
Alright, well, thank you so much, both of you, for sharing your insights with me. That's all the time that we have. I've been speaking to Sasha Lina Abdul Latif and Jamalia Jamaluddin. This has been It's About Youth with me, Fei Kwan. Thank you for watching.